This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
A question of Federal Reserve independence. I'm David Brancaccio. An opinion piece by a former Federal Reserve official is causing reverberations in the markets and beyond. William Dudley, a research scholar at Princeton, argues that the Fed should not help the Trump administration escalate its trade war by stimulating the economy. Now, the thing is, Mr. Dudley used to be the president of the New York Fed. He was not speaking for the Fed, and the central bank itself was quick to distance itself from the piece. But Dudley went on in his Bloomberg column to suggest that policies that help Trump get reelected could countervene the Fed's duty to keep the job market strong and inflation down. This alarms those who defend the Fed's tradition of staying out of politics. Many a Wednesday, we turn to Susan Schmidt, head of U.S. equities at Aviva Investors, to talk about the day's market psychology. Hi there.
Good morning.
Do you ever think we live in a world where this is the discourse?
Oh, my goodness, no. This is highly unusual. And the markets are looking at this dialogue and absorbing it all, and it's really increasing the skittishness of the markets. We're seeing the markets become more and more negative. Investors are very much waiting to see what happens. September is a big month for central banks. We have the Fed, the European Central Bank, and the Bank of Japan all meeting, and the markets are looking for support. This back and forth between the administration and various members, ex-members of the Federal Reserve, is really causing the markets to step back. We're seeing it in the bond market with the rate in the 10-year continuing to drop, reaching the new low for the year, and showing the skittishness of investors as they move into long-term bonds, trying to seek safety and avoid volatility.
Susan Schmidt is head of U.S. equities at Aviva Investors. Always good to talk to you.
Thank you.
BP is pulling out of Alaska after 60 years. The fossil fuel company announced yesterday that it was selling all of its Alaskan properties, including Prudhoe Bay, the highest output U.S. oil field ever, to Hilcorp Energy for about $5.6 billion. Jason Bordoff, a Columbia professor and is a founding director of the university's Center on Global Energy Policy, joins us. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
There's still oil in Alaska. Why would BP leave?
Well, I think the fact that BP is leaving Alaska, which is striking given how long BP has been there, BP is almost synonymous with Alaskan oil. The fact that they're leaving is just a reflection of how dramatically the U.S. oil sector has shifted. The outlook for Alaska, which was once the largest oil-producing state, has been dimming recently. It's been in decline. And the economic attractiveness of investing in Alaskan oil just pales compared to some other prospects now, notably U.S. shale, but also the Gulf of Mexico.
Wow. Remember, we used to live in a world where shale was super expensive and people thought it'll never work. And now you see this massive shift, really.
It's true. Shale competes economically. It's not the highest cost oil out there. That makes it attractive in a world with a lot of uncertainty, where a company like BP wants to be resilient to uncertainty, not only about oil prices, but also oil's long-term future and the long-term future of oil demand. So as we see electric vehicles, action on climate change, shale is short cycle, which means that shale can be ramped up and down and can be more flexible to respond more quickly to changing market conditions.
Oh, I see. You can get out of shale if you needed to more quickly.
The process of shale is one that requires continued reinvestment to sort of refrack the wells. The decline rates are much steeper. And so that means when you stop investing in shale, the production will decline more quickly. If you ramp up investment, it'll rise more quickly. Whereas legacy conventional production, often you're making large investments today, and then those wells are going to produce for decades to come.
Jason Bordoff at the Center on Global Energy Policy at Columbia University School of International and Public Affairs. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Now a diversity number. As of last year, 85% of lawyers in the U.S. were white. Some law schools are hoping to change that. The concern is that the law school admission test, the LSAT, may have created barriers. From WBUR, Carrie Young reports.
In September, Olivia Castor will start her first year at Harvard Law School. Looking back, she says she has strong feelings about studying for the LSAT. First, it was expensive.
For my books, let's see, I spent about $300. And then I also had a tutoring session. I spent $2,015.
Castor, who is African-American, took the LSAT last summer and says she didn't have friends or family in the legal field to ask for advice on how to study. So she wasn't as efficient as she could have been. Mark Miller, the dean of the University of Arizona Law School, says it's stories like Castor's that pushed him to look for alternatives. And he landed on the GRE.
Because it's so familiar and is now a basis for admissions to many different kinds of graduate programs.
The University of Arizona was the first accredited law school to give applicants the option to submit a GRE score instead of an LSAT score in 2016. Then, about a year later, Harvard Law School did the same thing. And now, about 24 law schools have followed suit.
Individuals who submitted the GRE, only the GRE, were more likely to be international, more likely to have significant work experience.
That's Christy Jobson, Assistant Dean for Admissions at Harvard Law School.
They were also more likely to be from an underrepresented racial or ethnic group.
So why might a different test improve diversity? One reason, access. The LSAT is only offered a handful of times during the year. But applicants can take the GRE almost daily worldwide, which is easier for people who work full-time or who are juggling childcare duties. The makers of the LSAT say they are making changes. Lily Knezovich with the Law School Admission Council says the group recently started offering free online test prep.
This is a commitment of ours going forward to expand awareness of what legal education is and to open it to more students.
It also increased the number of test days from 4 to 9 per year. In Boston, I'm Carrie Young for Marketplace.
And amid criticism, the College Board has dropped the idea of adding an adversity score to SAT results reported to colleges. There will no longer be a single number as planned, but a tool called Landscape for colleges to better understand the socioeconomic backgrounds of applicants. I'm David Brancaccio. This is the Marketplace Morning Report from APM. American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.